There, an open patch of grass, rubble scattered like gravestones. I blink hard, feeling the blindness in my right eye. Sweat turning cold in the late fall air, and I'm shivering by the time we near the gate, deep in the afternoon. I forgot what it was like to see the white crest rising over the trees. Up on the flat-top roof, the gun girls are two silhouettes. I wonder what I look like to them. There's a dead coyote by the gate, flies swarming around its bloodied face. Julia and Carson are waiting just beyond it, sitting propped up against the fence, and they get to their feet as we approach, weaving around the carcass.
"Remember,"
says Welch, low and close to my ear. Big smile. It's our job to show the girls inside that everything's fine. My lungs are still tight from running, my hands heavy with the food we threw over the side, but I stand up straight and do my best to put it all away. These secrets are mine to keep now. They picked me because they thought I could handle it. So I will. Welch unlocks the gate and we slip through single file, and through the front doors of the house. I set down my bag, look pointedly away from the girls clamoring around to get their shot at what's inside. There's Byatt waiting at the bottom of the stairs for me, and tilting her head, and not saying anything. "Where's Reese?" I ask once I'm close enough. "Haven't seen her all day." Byatt reaches for me. I want to sag against her, to let her hold me up, but I'm not supposed to let anybody see. "Okay." "Tired." Behind me, a set of measured footsteps, and when I turn, it's headmistress, concern shaping her face into something almost motherly.
"Are you quite all right?" she says.
I nod, ignore the building pressure in my chest. "I'm fine. It's just a lot to take in."
"Why don't you head upstairs?"
Headmistress lays her hand on my shoulder, fingers trembling like the tox is alive inside them.
"Some rest will do you good."
She's right, Byatt says. "Come on." "But the food..." Rest is all I want, but I'm supposed to wait until the girls have taken their share, then help carry what's left into the pantry. It's my job. Welch comes up alongside me and eases me away from the crowd.
"We'll take care of it," she says. "You go sleep."
I don't have the energy to argue. "Okay." I reach for the Bowie knife to give it back to her, but Welch shakes her head.
"You earned it," she says.
A knife in my belt like Julia, like Carson. I guess it's official. I let Byatt lead me up the stairs, and after a step or two, I shut my eye. Behind us, I can hear the girls scratching and clawing for the food, and I think of the ocean at the pier, of everything we threw overboard, of the chocolate I ate without a thought for anybody stuck here. Finally, our room, and I climb into our bunk, lie on my side. Byatt sits on the edge of the mattress, my body curling around her. "Do you want some water, maybe?" she says. "I'm fine, really. What happened out there, Hetty?" "And I want to, oh, I want to. Because if anybody knows what to say, it's Byatt." But I swallow hard, fold a little more into myself. "Everything is fine," I hear Welch say. "Nothing." She's quiet for a moment, and then she leans back against me, the knobs of her second spine pressing hard into my hip. The lines of her face are lit with the last of the sun. Sloping nose and long neck so familiar I could trace them in my sleep. Rich chestnut hair hanging down around her shoulders. Mine used to be long like hers, until she cut it for me during freshman spring. The two of us out on the porch, Byatt quiet and methodical as she trimmed it so the ends brush my jaw. She still does it, every few months. The ends splitting and fraying against the blunt blade of whatever knife she's managed to borrow from the boat girls. I nudge her a little, and she glances down at me. "You okay?" I ask. I forget to, sometimes. I forget she's like the rest of us. But she just smiles fondly. "Get some sleep. I'll be right here. And I did what I did. And I saw what I saw. But Byatt is here. And I fall asleep like it's the easiest thing in the world. Chapter 5. Reese isn't at breakfast the next morning. It's been nearly 2 days since I saw her last, since I got boat shift. But Byatt says she's seen her on the grounds, seen her holed up in what used to be a teacher's office at night. We're sitting by the fireplace today, sharing one of the couches with Kat and Lindsay. They started the same year we did, and I never used to talk to them much outside of class. After the talks, we started drifting together, trading food and blankets. Everybody needs more help now than they did before. Usually I'm the one who goes for food, but I still feel sick when I think about yesterday, about the rations we tossed into the water. Byatt went today instead, and she managed to wrangle a bag of croutons. Now she takes a handful, nudges the bag in my direction. "You have to eat something," she says. "Later." "I can't." "I know. I know we threw that food away for a reason, but that doesn't make it any easier to watch Byatt counting every bite she takes."
"Hetty, a word?"
It's Welch. I twist around on the couch to see her. Her mouth is flat, a tight, thin line, but she seems almost nervous, like she did before the talks when she'd catch you breaking curfew.
"Sure," I say and get up, start toward Welch. "I'll save you some food," Byatt calls, "whether you like it or not."
I wave over my shoulder.
"Thanks, Mom."
Welch leads me to the mouth of the hallway. This close I can see frown lines setting in her forehead, and her eyes look bright, like she's on the edge of a fever.
"What's up?" I say.
"Byatt is right. You should eat something."
"I'm not hungry. I can't. I can't take more than what I've already taken." Welch lets out a breath.
"Hetty,"
and she sounds serious,
"I need you to work a little harder, please."
"What?" "Just the fact that I'm in the main hall is already more than I can take."
"I told you it was your job to show everybody here that things are fine. But instead, you're sitting there looking, quite frankly, ready to vomit."
"I'm trying, okay?" I say, frustration bleeding into my voice.
"Not hard enough."
She looks over my shoulder, to where I know Byatt is sitting.
"There are usually three of you. Where's Reese?"
"That's not related."
Welch scoffs. "Everything is. After that stunt she pulled when you got boat shift, the two of you are on the radar."
She leans in.
"The girls are watching you, Hetty. So whatever your little fight was about, I need you to fix it. Kiss and make up. Anything that gets the three of you back to normal." "Normal, Hetty."
"It's Reese. Sulking is normal for her."
"I'm not asking,"
Welch says sharply, her jaw set, her eyes glinting.
"Yeah."
I hold up my hands in surrender. "Okay, I'll talk to her."
"You won't tell her anything you shouldn't."
"I barely tell her anything on a good day."
"I won't."
Welch smiles, or gets close to it, and rests her hand on my shoulder.
"Thank you,"
she says.
"Sometime today would be good."
She makes it a few steps away before it slips out of me. "Doesn't it bother you, lying to everyone?" For a second, she doesn't answer, and then she turns. I can see it in her face. How she wants to do it right. How she wants to say the adult thing.
"Yeah, it does."
And she shrugs.
"So?"
"So doesn't that mean something?" I want to yell. "So doesn't that matter?" "So nothing, I guess." She nods.
"Today, Hetty."
When I get back to Byatt, I can tell she's been watching us. Fingernails freshly bitten. Frown lingering. "I have to talk to Reese," I say. "You better come find us in about 5 minutes in case she tries to kill me again." "It was only choking," Byatt says, but she nods and hooks her fingers in my belt loop to stop me as I pass. "Careful,"
Yeah?
I give her a smile. I'm always careful with Reese, even though she rarely is with me.
Sure.
It was easier with Reese when her dad was here. Right when they set up the quarantine, they brought Mr. Harker to our side of the fence, stuck him in the wing with the teachers, and we all pretended like it wasn't the strangest part of what was happening, having a man in the house with us. He was here for maybe a month. We kept track of things like that then. But now it feels so long ago, I can barely remember. All that's left are flashes. Reese and her father eating breakfast in the dining room, back before we trashed the furniture for burning. Reese and her father rigging up the generator out back. The two of them on the porch tracing constellations in the sky. Reese laughing in a way she never did with me and Byatt. And other things, too. How he started to change. Slowly, at first. Just an eagerness in his hands to scratch and tear apart. The talks, though we didn't call it that yet. All we really knew was that one day Mr. Harker was safe, and the next he wasn't. One day he was himself, and the next he was throwing up a black sludge, grainy like dirt, and looking at us with empty eyes. Reese ignored it, pretended it was fine, picked a screaming match with Byatt, and then the next day Mr. Harker was gone. He left a note tucked in Reese's jacket while she was sleeping, saying he had to go, saying it was safest that way for everyone. She ran to the fence that morning. I remember that. Cut her palms to ribbons, clawing at it, trying to get through. But Taylor held her back, and me and Byatt. We watched Reese fall apart. When she came back together again, there was something gone. It was never like that for me. Goodbyes at airports and watching the news. But my dad always came back. I find Reese in the Jack Pine Grove by the water, in the same spot where we were sitting the first day of the talks. She's there now, on that same low branch of that same tree, and the only thing different from that day to this one is the glint of her silver hand as she shivers in her thin jacket. I come up slow, in front of her where she can see, which is always safest. In the nearly 2 days since I last saw her, circles have darkened under her eyes. She looks hungry, I think, and cold. But it was never her who needed us, always the other way around. Hi, I say. She doesn't look up, and I bite my lip to keep from saying something I shouldn't. Remember what Welch said, I remind myself. Remember, this is important. About boat shift, I lean against the trunk, leave plenty of room between us. I didn't know I'd get it. I thought it would be you. Me too, she says, voice gritty and hoarse like it was her throat that got crushed, not mine. And I want to scream, want to wring an apology out of her. But then she looks at me, frowns. You okay? It's something. Maybe the most I can expect. Fine. Really, fine.
Are you sure?
She tries for a smile.
Because you look terrible. Like, that's a Beth in Little Women face.
Oh no, I say flatly. Do you think I might be sick?
At Raxter?
She raises her eyebrows, face stamped with fake surprise.
Never!
We fall quiet. Both of us, I think, in shock that we've managed to make even the weakest joke. Byatt needs to get here and quick before we ruin it. I twist around to peer through the trees, and when I face front again, Reese is swinging her feet. She looks almost shy. But Reese doesn't do shy. Even when she came out to me, it was like a weapon. Queer, she said then, as though she was daring me to disagree.
You went on boat shift yesterday, she says now and waits.
Yeah.
What's it like?
It's different. I barely get the words out.
Different how?
Remember Welch, remember my job, everything is fine.
There are more trees, I say stupidly. Look, Hetty, I have to know. I have to. Did you see him? My dad? My house? Anything?
I shake my head. I'm sorry, Reese. She looks away, but not before I see the tears she's blinking back. I clear my throat awkwardly, wish more than anything I could just disappear.
Where's Byatt? She was gonna come find us.
Reese doesn't answer, so I start toward the house, but I'm only a few yards out of the grove when Kat comes running, breathing hard. I try not to look at the blisters scattered across her hairline, each of them torn and bleeding.
Hey, she says, you better get inside.
Dread, creeping and bitter, I swallow hard.
What for? It's your girl. She's having a flare-up.
At first, there's nothing. Just a tingle in my fingers, a dull ache behind my blind eye, and then a dizziness, and I sway as my knees buckle.
No, I say. No, I just saw her. Sorry, Kat says. I came as quick as I could.
It's impossible. I was with Byatt barely 10 minutes ago, and she was fine. She has to be fine. I turn, searching for Reese, but she's jumped down from the branch, followed me out of the grove, and is right there behind me, mouth drawn in a tight line. Without a word, we run for the house, faster and faster until I'm tearing into the main hall. Mostly empty this time of day, with only a few girls clustered by the fireplace. No Byatt. I should have asked Kat where she was. I should have.
Easy,
Reese says quietly, and I reach out, fumble for her hand, squeeze tight. I've been there for them all, for the flare-up that stole Byatt's voice for nearly a week, for the one that sliced a line down her back and left her with a second spine. I have to be there for this one. A shuddering whine breaks the air. Fear crashing over me, cold and fresh. I tear away from Reese. That came from the back of the house, down the south wing toward the kitchen. I elbow my way through the group by the fireplace and sprint along the hallway, classrooms and offices rushing past, each one empty, and no Byatt. Until at last, there she is, sprawled on the kitchen floor, her dark hair covering her face. Please, this can't be happening. I crash to my knees next to her. Twin lines of blood trail from her nose, streaking across her teeth as she gasps for air. She's crying, I think, but it's hard to tell. One hand gripping a packet of crackers, the other clawing at her throat.
What happened? I say, words tumbling frantically over one another. What hurts? What is it?
She mouths something, and it looks like my name, but then her eyes roll back. She convulses, her muscle snapping tight as a curve sweeps up her body like a wave. I think I'm screaming, but it sounds like nothing. Hands on my shoulders, pulling me back, I bat them away, feel for a pulse on Byatt's neck.
Hey, I say as she opens her eyes, both of them bloodshot. It's me. You're okay.
I sent someone to find Welch, Reese says.
She sounds calm, deliberate. But I know Reese, and I know that means she's panicked. She comes to stand on the other side of Byatt's body, only she's not watching Byatt. She's watching me.
Hold on, okay?
Last time there was so much blood, blooming underneath her, pulling in the cracks between the floorboards. This time there's only her nosebleed, smeared across her mouth, dripping onto the floor. I push up her sleeves, search for marks or wounds, anything.
I need your help, I say, kneeling over her.
It empties me out to see her like this. You have to tell me what's wrong. She reaches up, her hand shaking, and hooks her fingers in the collar of my shirt. I bend so close I can feel her saliva sticking to my cheek.
Eddie,
she says.
Eddie, please.
It's the worst thing I've ever heard. Her voice sounds like metal on metal, like a million people all together, a scream and a whisper and everything in between, and it hurts. A real hurt reaching all the way to my bones. Like they're cracking, like they're glass. I curl in on myself, press my hands to my ears. It feels like it lasts forever, until finally the rattle is gone from my body and I can think again.
Shit,
Reese says, Arian weak like it hit her too.
What was that?
I ignore her and crawl back to Byatt, who's nearly hyperventilating, trying to sit up, and she looks afraid. A year and a half of the tox. I've never seen her afraid until today.
You're all right,
I say, reaching out. But she shakes her head and presses her hand to my cheek, like she's asking, what about you? Down the hall, I can hear voices getting closer, Welch and a few others, probably Julia and Carson. This is what boat shift does. Clean up the mess, put it away. Except now the mess is by it, and I won't let them take her from my sight. I'm fine, I say when Byatt tugs on my earlobe, pulling my attention back. Welch is coming, okay? She's gonna look after you. Byatt takes a breath, ready to say something, and Reese is there in a second, her hand clapped firmly over Byatt's mouth.
Don't talk, Reese says. It'll hurt.
Welch jogs into the room, Julia and Carson a few steps behind. They're watching Byatt, Julia's hand lingering too close to the knife in her belt, but Welch turns to me.
Can she walk?
I know what Byatt would say. That she's right here, that she can speak for herself. But I don't ever want to feel the way I did when she spoke.
I think so.
Welch nods to Carson and Julia.
Take her up.
I scramble to my feet, swaying a little.
I'll help.
Absolutely not,
Welch says, shaking her head.
It's boat shift's job. I'm boat shift.
Not for this you aren't.
Julia and Carson come closer, boots squeaking on the checkered tile. They keep from looking at me as they crouch on either side of Byatt and grab her elbows, help her up. She doesn't fight it. I think she knows there's no point. She just looks at me as they take her past, and at the last second, she reaches out and smacks something into my palm. The packet of crackers. Broken to pieces now. She must have found Taylor's stash. I clutch them to my chest. Try not to cry. She wanted me to eat. She said I shouldn't go hungry.
You're going to have to put those back,
Welch says, and I swing around to look at her. She can't be serious.
Excuse me?
She nods to the crackers.
Food is food.
I hardly know what to say, but I don't have to.
No thanks, Reese says. I think we'll keep them.
She looks at me and my heart feels too big for my chest. So this is what it's like to have Reese go to bat for you. Welch glances between us and then shrugs. Nobody is here to see her give in, and she's still got a soft spot for us when she can afford to let it show. She's almost out of the room when it bursts out of me.
Is Byatt going to be okay?
My voice is about to crack, and it would be embarrassing if I cared about that at all.
Will she come down soon?
Welch stops, doesn't turn around, just the line of her shoulders against the dark. And then she keeps going, leaves me in the kitchen with my vision blurring. And even though I can still feel her hands around my neck, Reese is all I want.
I bet it's nothing.
I try. Like it'll make more sense if I say it out loud.
That's right,
Reese says. She's watching me from the top bunk. I'm underneath on mine, flat on my back, arms folded across my chest. I thought maybe she'd stay away, like she has been since I got boat shift. But she followed me upstairs as if none of that ever happened. And I tried to sleep. We both did. But halfway into the night, I let out a sigh, and Reese leaned over the side of her bunk to look down at me.
I'm sure she'll be fine.
But we both know only the sickest girls go up to the infirmary, and most of them never come down again. I wrap myself up tighter in my jacket. I'm worried.
I know.
She's all I have. A heartbeat of quiet. And I realize how it must sound to Reese. Reese, who is right here? Sorry, I say.
It's okay.
I know this is the part where I'm supposed to tell her I didn't mean it. But the truth is, I never think of Reese as mine. As if someone like her could belong to someone like me.
to anyone at all.
Really, though, Reese says, Baya will be fine.
You can't promise that. She frowns, rolls back over onto her bunk so I can't see her anymore.
I'm not promising.
Okay, I say, and hear her squirm around to get comfortable.
What about the time we went to that museum? She says slowly. The one in Portland.
Byatt and I used to do this. For the first little while after the talks. Trading stories from before. The two of us on the bottom bunk and Reese above, never saying anything but listening. I know now she was listening.
Oh yeah, I say. I remember that. I'd never been to Portland before.
You'd never been anywhere, I say with a laugh.
And we got lunch in that food court with the soda machines. We kept mixing them all in one cup.
It was a fun field trip, I say.
My favorite part was when you got sick in the planetarium.
It's almost what Byatt would say. Reese is trying, but she can't get it quite right. Because nobody's Byatt but Byatt. Not even the girl in these memories. There's this place in her. Somewhere nobody can touch. Not me, or Reese, or anyone. It's just hers. And I don't even know what it is, really. Just that it's there. And that she takes it with her when she goes. Chapter 6. I don't want the morning. But it comes anyway. Hard and bright. Sun out from the clouds. I bury my face in my pillow, dreading the sight of the emptiness whereby it should be. The top bunk creaks, and I hear Reese whisper my name. I roll over, ease my eye open, my blind one pulsing with hurt like it always does when I wake. There she is, peering down at me over the edge of her bed. Her hair's coming loose from her braid, fine wisps of gold falling in her eyes. Small rounded nose, and low flaring cheekbones.
Hey,
she says, and my mouth goes dry. Have I been staring?
Did you know that you snore?
Oh. I swallow down what tastes almost like disappointment.
I don't snore. Sure you do. It's this little whistling.
She tilts her head.
Like a bird, or a kettle.
My cheeks are hot, and I shut my eye tightly.
This is really nice. I like being bullied first thing in the morning.
She laughs. I look up just in time to see it. Her hair full of shine, her head thrown back, throat bared to the sunlight. She's in a good mood this morning. I can't understand why. Doesn't she remember what happened to Byatt? Doesn't she care? She might not care, but I do. And I'm not letting this go until I know Byatt's all right.
Where are you going?
Reese asks as I get to my feet.
The infirmary.
I bend down, do up my boots. We sleep with them on to keep the cold from setting too deep, but I always loosen my laces before bed. I'm visiting Byatt. You coming?
No,
Reese says, her chin propped on the edge of her bunk.
Considering headmistress will never let you up there.
Maybe not, but I'm boat shift now, and I have the knife in my belt to prove it. If there's an exception to be made, headmistress will make it for me. She's my best friend, I say. It's worth trying. Reese is quiet for a moment, and when I look up, she's watching me with an expression I can't quite place. Not anger. I know that on her too well, but something softer.
I don't know, Hetty, she says. Is it really friendship with you and Byatt?
I've wondered.
Of course I have.
And I love Byatt more than anything. More than myself. More than the life I had before Raxter. But I know the warmth in my heart when I look at her. How it burns smooth and even, without a spark. Yes, I say. She's my sister, Reese. She's part of me. Reese frowns and sits up, swings her legs over the edge of her bunk.
Look, I get it's not my business.
You apparently feel the need to comment on it anyway. Because it affects me, she says, and I'm taken aback by the sting in her voice, by the snarl of her lips. I like by it, okay? But I don't want you to be with me the way you are with her. You don't want us to be friends? Reese sighs like I said something wrong, like there's something more I'm supposed to understand. No, she says plainly, I don't. I can't pretend it doesn't send me reeling. Well, that's... I start, but there's nothing after, just an emptiness, and not as much surprise as I'd like. Okay, I finish at last and head for the door. I can hear Reese saying my name, but I don't listen. Just yank the door open and hurry out into the hallway. It shouldn't matter to me. I have Byatt to worry about. And besides, I wrote Reese off years ago. Too closed, I remind myself. Too cold. She's only with me because she has nobody else. The hallway opens onto the second floor mezzanine, and talk drifts up from the girls gathered below in the main hall. Their voices soft with sleep. A few of them will go back to bed once they've eaten breakfast. Sometimes that's all there is to do. But across the mezzanine is the door to the infirmary staircase, and up there somewhere is Byatt. I'm wondering if I can work the lock with the point of my boat shift knife, when the door jerks open, and there's headmistress, stepping off the last of the rickety narrow stairs. Excuse me, I call, hurrying over. Headmistress looks up from the clipboard she's carrying. As soon as she sees me, she shuts the door behind her. Is Byatt all right? How's she doing?
I think perhaps there's another way you might begin this conversation, headmistress says.
She's dressed the same as always, slacks and a button-down shirt, her sturdy hiking boots the only concession to what's happened at her school. In her slacks pocket, I can spot the edge of a blood-stained handkerchief, the one she uses when the sores on her tongue burst.
Good morning, for instance.
I stop and take a deep breath, fight the impulse to push past her.
Good morning, headmistress.
She smiles brightly.
And good morning to you. How are you today?
This is torture, that's what it is.
I'm good,
I say through gritted teeth, and she raises an eyebrow.
Well, sorry, I'm well. I'm very glad.
She peers down at her clipboard, and then, when she realizes I'm not leaving, clears her throat.
Can I help you with something?
Byatt's up there, I say, like she doesn't know. Can I go see her?
I'm afraid not, Miss Chapin.
I won't even go into her room, I plead. I'll just talk to her through the door or something. I don't care if I don't see her. I just have to know that she's okay, that she's still her. But headmistress is shaking her head, giving me that smile adults always have in their pocket. The one that says they feel sorry for you in a way you can't understand yet.
Why don't you go downstairs for breakfast?
This isn't fair. This is my home as much as hers. I should be able to go where I like. It'll only take a second, I say.
You know the rules.
She locks the door to the infirmary stairs with one of the keys on the ring she always has hanging from her belt. I clench my fists to keep myself from ripping it off her. What does any of this matter? We're all sick. It's not like seeing Byatt will make either of us worse.
I'm sorry. I know you must miss your friend.
My friend. My sister, that's what I told Reese. I should have called her my lifeline. Yeah, I say, I do. It's clear headmistress won't change her mind, and I'm about to turn and leave, to think of some other plan when she presses the back of her hand against my forehead. The way my mom used to check for a fever. I reel back, startled. She only makes a disapproving sound and does it again.
How are you feeling? She asks. You don't seem warm.
It takes me a minute to remember, but she's talking about when I got back from boat shift. That was the day before yesterday, but it feels like ages ago.
I'm fine, I say, inching away uncomfortably.
Headmistress doesn't usually like to let you know she cares. Before the talks, it was different. I remember the first time I met her, how nervous I was coming up here from Norfolk all by myself, 13 and alone, and I miss my mother. And when headmistress saw me getting teary during the school tour,
She told me her door was always open if I ever needed someone to talk to, or even just a little space away from the other girls.
Well, headmistress says, plucking a piece of lint from the collar of my jacket, I'm glad to hear you're feeling better. I'm sure your friend, Miss Windsor, will follow suit. And in the meantime, she's lucky to have you looking for her.
It runs through me like a current.
Looking for her?
Like she's missing. Like she's gone. And I heard headmistress right. I know I did. For a moment, her expression freezes. And then she smiles, strain showing through.
Looking out for her, she corrects me. Now, why don't you go down to breakfast? You must be hungry.
I linger for a beat longer. Enough to see headmistress's knuckles turn white where she's gripping the clipboard. And that does it. I back up, give her my best smile, and head down to the main hall. There are the other girls, dotted in clusters, taking small controlled bites of molding bread and breaking the edges off stale crackers. It punches back into me. Everything that's happened, everything I've seen and the secrets I've kept. The others are rationing food and starving themselves through breakfast, and I held what they needed in my own two hands. I can't do this, not now. I pick my way through the others to the double doors at the front entrance and slip outside. My jacket is too thin to keep out the cold, but it's better here than in the main hall. At least this way nobody can remind me of what I've done. I spend the rest of the day out by the water, at the point where the stones are bleached and smooth. I count my fingers as I lose the feeling in them, let the weak sun scatter across my numb skin. When I get back to my room for the night, Reese is already there, sprawled on her top bunk, asleep, or pretending to be. This distance between us is getting too familiar. But at least this time she's not avoiding me. At least this time she's here. I don't know if Bayard ever will be again. And I can't let that stand. I wait until the moon is high. My mattress groans as I get out of bed, and I hold my breath, wait to make sure Reese hasn't heard. Nothing from her bunk. I edge toward the door, and she's still, her hair burning in the black as I slip into the hallway. It's empty. Only a few snatches of talk from the dorms breaking the quiet. The youngest girls are whispering about something. Laughter here, a hush there. And they don't hear a thing as I tiptoe past to crouch where the hallway opens to the mezzanine. There's the door to the infirmary staircase, shut tight as always. Without a key, there's no way past it for me. So the best way to get to the infirmary rooms, then, is the roof. It slants up from the second floor to the roof deck, with dormers for each window poking out. If I get up there, I can sneak around the backside, climb through one of the windows without gunshift or headmistress catching me. I count to 10. Even steps so the floorboards don't creak. I never minded the dark before Raxter. Never had it, really. Not on the base with the steady glare of the floodlights. Here it feels different. Somehow alive. I tug my jacket around me tight and go. Across the open mezzanine, past the top of the staircase and into the mouth of the north wing. There's no one here as I make my way down the corridor. Just empty rooms. A handful of faculty offices. Papers long since burned. Bare bed frames and teacher's dorms. Chairs broken up for kindling. At the end is the gun shift room. The admissions sign still on the door. The open window. Chilled fall air gusting through. My way out. It's easy. Hoisting myself up like I did every day for gun shift. Strange without Bayard behind me to swat at my heels. But soon enough, I'm crouched low on the slope of the roof, shingles wet with melted frost under my hands. On the deck above me, I can see the silhouettes of two girls with their guns aimed. They're looking straight ahead, out at the woods as they talk softly to each other. Good. As long as I'm quiet, they won't notice. I crawl forward toward the nearest dormer. Through it, I can see one of the infirmary rooms, just a bed and bare mattress draped in shadow. Door closed to the hallway. No Byatt, but no headmistress either. I notch my shoulder in under the window frame and start to work it up. The wood's warped after a year and a half without maintenance, and I have to stop every few shoves, make sure the girls on gun shift haven't heard me. Feet slipping on the shredded shingles, and below me the night swallows the ground, but I don't look. One, two, three, and the window shutters up, opens maybe a foot. I don't go through. I wait, crouched on the sill, and I watched as headmistress's candle lights up a strip at the bottom of the door and fades out. Footsteps tapping on the stairs as she heads down to the second floor, and then quiet. I go in head first, scramble up to standing. There are six rooms on the third floor, three at the front and back each. I'm in the one closest to the stairs. Five more to check before someone catches me. Cross to the door, test the latch. It's unlocked. These doors have bolts on the outside, left over from the house's earliest days and put to use after we got sick. But with nobody here, headmistress must not bother doing them up. I pull it open with both hands. Out in the narrow hallway, I stop again and listen. The house is never silent. Not when this old, and not now that everything's changed. But I don't hear headmistress or Welch anywhere. Don't hear Byatt either. But I tell myself she's probably just asleep. I try the opposite door. Unlock two. And the room empty just like the other. It's fine. Four more rooms, four more places she could be. But the third one's empty, and the fourth. And by the time I get to the fifth room, I'm breathing hard. I can hear my heart beating in my ears. And she's not here. She isn't. She isn't. Sixth door, swinging wide. The bed empty, mattress askew and dipped in moonlight, and there, amid a set of scuff marks on the floor, a needle and thread. Byatt's. The ones she always carried in her pocket. The ones she used to fix me. She's gone. Thread, cold and spreading, but I push it away. Something happened. But whatever it was, she got through it. Like she's got through everything. She's somewhere, and she's alive. I should check the offices on the second floor, and every classroom, and hell, maybe the big storage closet just to be... A sound on the stairs. Someone's coming. I freeze, then snatch up the needle and thread and hurry back to the first room. The open window still waiting, air gusting through. No time. Can't climb out without making too much noise, and there's a light. Headmistress's candle. Closer, closer. Here. It stops in front of the door to this room. Can't move. Can't breathe. If headmistress comes in, if she catches me, I don't know what she'll do. And then something I haven't heard in a year and a half, not since Mr. Harker left. The crackle of static. The filter and hiss of a walkie-talkie and a voice. A man's voice. It's like cold water in my veins and a shiver scrapes over me.
Rexter, call in. Over.
There's a beep and then a hitch in the static.
This is Rexter. Over.
I jerk with surprise and narrowly miss hitting my head against the window frame. It's Welch. Not headmistress, like I was expecting. Welch doesn't come up here much, if ever.
Requesting status report,
the man says.
Over.
It must be someone from the base on the coast, the Navy, or the CDC. They're the only other people in the world who know what's happening here. Even our parents don't know the whole truth. Influenza, I think that's what they were told. I wonder if they knew it was a lie.
All well, Welch says. Did the replacement arrive safely? Over.
Silence. And then the man says,
confirming receipt. Over.
Receipt? And replacement for what? Nothing leaves the island. Not even our bodies. When one of us dies, we burn her out back. As far from the house and the fence as we can manage. A whole square of earth scorched. The smell unbearable. Bones and fillings buried under stone cairns.
There's something else,
Welch says, sounding almost reluctant. We have to make a return. Over.
The supplies. That's what I think of first. But we've done that already. She has to mean something else.
For a long moment, no answer. Welch starts to pace, and I track her movement as the steady light under the door shifts.
She won't come in here, I tell myself. I'm safe, I'm safe, I'm safe.
Finally, her walkie chirps back to life.
This time tomorrow,
the man says.
Drop her at the Harker house. Over.
Her. Not the body, but her. And that's by it. It has to be. And they're talking about her like she's still someone. I feel my heart bloom with relief. But if she's not here, where is Welch keeping her until tomorrow, and what for? Welch stops pacing.
Confirmed. Over. Over and out.
The air goes quiet. A moment later, the light under the door fades, and I hear Welch's footsteps heading farther along the hall. I ease out the window, heave it shut, settle on my hands and knees, and slowly, slowly inch across the roof. The gunshift girls still have their eyes on the trees, and they don't see me as I lower myself over the edge and swing in through the second floor window. I sneak down the hallway, across the mezzanine. Check the rise of the moon. Mark it in my head. This time tomorrow. That's what the man on the walkie said. And go back to my own room, to my own bed. Therese, sitting up in her bunk and waiting for me, because of course she knows I left. Something's happened, I say. She's not in the infirmary. Therese frowns, and I can see it already, the disbelief building in her.
What are you talking about?
And there was this man, on the walkie. I'm practically out of breath, tumbling over myself to get it all out.
Slow down. Start from the beginning.
I tell her everything. About the empty rooms, about the needle and thread, about Welch, about the walkie-talkie and the man's voice on the other end, about the plans they made to take by it to the Harker house. I don't know where else Welch could be keeping her, I finish, leaning against the ladder. I can feel a shake setting into my muscles. She has to be holding her somewhere if they're not leaving until tomorrow. The classrooms on the ground floor aren't private enough, and there aren't any outbuildings on the grounds besides the barn. Just an old tool shed, but we've torn that apart for firewood. What do you think? I say, looking to Reese. At first, she says nothing, the light from her hair showing me her widened eyes, and then she lets out a shuddering sigh.
My house, she says,
a strange contortion of her face, like she's trying not to laugh or maybe cry.
You're sure he said my house?
Of course that's what she's focusing on. I guess I can't exactly blame her. I'm sure, I said. For real, Reese, we have to find Byatt. She's still here somewhere.
I'm sure she is,
Reese says, words light and easy, a deliberately blank expression on her face. And that means she's holding something back. But what? I say. Byatt's here somewhere, but what? I should be expecting it. But it's still a surprise when Reese says,
Is she dead or alive?
A hot rush of anger, bright and shattering, because I've been pushing that thought back since the infirmary, and couldn't she let me? What kind of question is that?
An important one, she says. You're not an idiot, Hetty. You know what usually happens to girls like us. None of this is what usually happens.
I take a deep breath, clench my fists. Don't let it in. She's alive. She's alive. She's alive. Girls don't usually disappear like this. That has to mean something.
Yeah, Reese says. I think it means she's already dead.
I push back from the bunk, ignore the panic swelling in my gut. Reese is wrong, and Byatt is fine.
Then how come we haven't burned her?
She's alive. I have to find her. I just do.
And then what? We can't help her.
She's right, of course. But it doesn't matter. We can get through it with her, I say. That's all we have left, and I'm not giving it up. I might not know where she is right now, but I know where she'll be tomorrow night. I'm going out there after her.
You can't do that.
Reese's voice is low, urgent as she leans closer. You know you can't. It's breaking quarantine.
So what? I say. I'm boat shift. Boat shift is allowed past the fence.
She rolls her eyes. I think they meant that for going to pick up supplies and not sneaking after your friend.
I wave it away. They've always told us the quarantine is the most important thing. But if I'm choosing between it and buy it, it's no choice at all.
And even if you did go out there, Reese continues, how would you get back in past the fence?
She pulls at the end of her braid with silver fingers, her split ends starting to fray.
The gate locks and...
I'll climb over it, I say hotly. I'll figure it out. I'm not worried about that.
I am, she says.
But she's looking at me, her face open and unsure. And there it is, that kick in my chest, that reaching I've been trying to ignore since we met.
Come with me, I say. We'll go together.
It's magic. One second she's in it with me, her head bent close to mine, and then she settled back into that posture I know so well. Arms crossed, jaw clenched, eyes emptied of heart.
No, she says. No, you do what you want, but I won't go with you.
For once, I'm not willing to let it lie. This is too important, all of it. Why not? She makes an exasperated sound.
Hetty!
Whatever patience I had left is gone. I'm gripping the edge of the bunk so hard I can feel a splinter bite deep into my palm.
What is wrong with you? Byatt's our friend. Don't you want her to be okay?
Wanting has nothing to do with it, she says. But it's pouring out of me, louder than I should be, angrier than I expected.
Because I know you don't care, I keep on, a bitter twist to my words. I know that makes you better than me, but I can't just write the whole world off like you do. I don't care. Are you?
And then she breaks off like it hurts. For a second, I can see it all laid out across her. The longing and the resignation and the betrayal. The sting of watching the island she loves steal the people she pretends she doesn't. Oh, I say. My voice thick, lodged in my throat. I've spent every day since I met her telling myself the wrong thing. Telling myself over and over that she was cold, when maybe she was burning the whole time. I'm sorry. Jesus, Reese, I'm sorry. Her parents both gone. And this is what it did to her. This is the wreck it left behind. I should have seen it. I should have seen how she loves as hard as I do. Only I think it pins her down where it picks me up.
I wish I could. She says, not looking at me. I wish I could be like you. But I can't go looking for her if I couldn't go looking for him. I thought boat shift was the only way past the fence. But here you are, ready to tear it down with your bare hands.
She lets out a shaking breath, and then softly, why couldn't I do that for my dad? For once, I think I know what to say. It's what people used to tell me when I was small, when my father was deployed. You're his daughter, I say. You're not supposed to be the one protecting him. She doesn't answer. Still, she has to be listening. But Byatt's our girl. I'm watching Reese's face, and I have her. I know I do. We are supposed to protect her, just like she'd do it for us. I take a deep breath. Just like I'd do it for you. A flicker of surprise on her face. One that lights an answering spark of shame in my stomach. Is that really news to her? But she reaches out then. And I feel something catch in my chest as her palm slides against mine.
Yeah, she says. Okay.
There's nothing more to be done tonight, and the adrenaline is draining from me, leaving me about ready to keel over. I smile at her and let go, duck into my bunk. I lie on my back, still leaving room next to me for Byatt, like always. Above me, I can hear Reese taking off her jacket to use as a blanket. It's too quiet, and as easy as it just was with her. Suddenly, I want more than anything for the ground to swallow me up, so we don't have to listen to each other pretend to be asleep.
Hey, Reese says suddenly. It wasn't my dad, was it? On the walkie?
I'm not sure how to let her down.
Never mind.
She sounds gruff, embarrassed, and I can picture her shaking her head.
I thought if one of my parents was going to come back, it would be him.
A rustle and a creak in the wooden ribs of our bunk beds as she gets comfortable, ending the conversation. I'm surprised she started it to begin with. But then she's different without Byatt here. Or maybe we both are. I clench my fists, try to work up the courage. I've wondered this since I met her, but when Reese doesn't want to talk, nothing can make her.
You don't have to tell me, I start.
There's a tremor in my voice. I keep going. But, Reese, where did your mom go? I can't see her. So instead, I watch the patterns of light her braid throws onto the ceiling, trace their soft, blurring glow.
It's complicated, she says at last. Or maybe I just wish it was.
I don't understand.
Last I heard, she was still in Maine. Portland, maybe.
What? That's barely 200 miles away. I'd always assumed she'd gone far, or even that Reese didn't know where she was.
Yeah, Reese says.
She doesn't sound sad, or angry, or anything.
She didn't want to leave Maine. She just wanted to leave me.
I don't know what could soothe that sting. But she's talking to me. That has to count for something. I'm sorry, I say. You know, you could have told me about it before.
Some things don't belong to other people, she says, tired and drifting. Some things are just mine.
As if I needed more proof that we're built from different things. Reese holds herself so apart, and all I've ever wanted was to be half of someone else, coming to Raxter. It was like I hadn't found my place until I got here. Like I didn't know who I was until Byatt told me. And I know what Reese would say. I know she'd say that's not healthy. Say, that's not how it's supposed to work. But the whole world is coming down around us every day. And don't we have bigger problems? No. Reese isn't Byatt. But I like her. I like how she talks without talking. I even like that she doesn't always like me.
Byatt. Chapter 7. Trying to blink, but what? Slow, thick, like my tongue, hot and dry. Hear a sliver of something. Hear the world sneaking back under my eyelids. Here I am. I am awake. Heat running through my head like a current. Light pricking at my eyes until I'm in a bed in a room. And I don't hurt, but I feel my whole body at once. The room is big, built for something different than this. Peeling linoleum floor. Curtain half drawn around me. And through the gap, a bulletin board on the wall, hanging at an angle. And three other beds, all empty. I reach out to touch the curtain, to pull it back, to... can't move. Hands strapped down, held by my wrists. IV needle slipped in through my skin. Somewhere a door opening. Heavy, muffled steps. A suit. Plastic and pale, sleepy blue. I can see it through the curtain as it approaches. Pushing in and shaking an arm to keep the curtain from clinging, and it says, "Feeling okay?" He is a boy, he says. His name is Dietrich. He's just joking. He doesn't know why he said that.